I'm Kay Firth Butterfield at the World Economic Forum.
And I'm Miriam Vogel with Equal AI. And this is In AI We Trust. Hello and welcome to another episode of In AI We Trust. This week we are thrilled to be joined by Shelley Zalas, the founder and CEO of the Female Quotient, an organization that creates platforms for women and solutions for organizations committed to closing the gender gap in the workplace. If you have been to Davos, South by Southwest, CES, or any other major conference, you know Shelley and her magnificent creation that provides a home for so many of us and a constant source of inspiration. And you'll understand why we thought of her first when considering women we wanted to celebrate for Women's History Month. The Female Quotient works with Fortune 500 companies, impact organizations, and conscious leaders to advance equality in the workplace. The FQ's signature pop-up experience, the FQ Lounge, brings a home of equality to major conferences, companies, and college campuses around the world. Shelley is co-founder of Hashtag SeeHer, a movement led by the Association of National Advertisers to increase the accurate portrayal of women and girls in advertising and media. And prior to founding the Female Quotient, Shelley founded the Online Testing Exchange, which became one of the fastest growing research companies in the world. Shelley, thank you so much for joining us, and particularly as we celebrate women who are supporting other women and our collective betterment of society this Women's History Month.
Yay, I'm so happy to be here with you, and you are remarkable and inspiring to me, so yay.
Well, to start, Shelley, we mentioned and we all know what you've created is remarkable, an institution and a platform in support of women. And I know you think broadly about who and what issues that includes when you talk about it being a place for all conscious leaders and experiences across the globe. Can you share with us the path that led you to found the Female Quotient? What inspired you to start this company and focus on women's empowerment?
You know, it was definitely not a conscious choice. It was kind of by accident, but I was the only female CEO, top 25 in market research. So I wasn't only and lonely. And after I had sold my company to Ipsos, the third largest global research company in the world, I decided it was time to give back with generosity what I wish I had my entire career, which was girlfriends in business, women supporting women. So I started the Female Quotient, which was all about changing the equation and closing the gender gap, and wanted to go to a tech conference, CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas. And I heard there was 150,000 people, less than 3% were women. And I was just so tired of going to conferences by myself, being one of those few women in an ocean of men, you know, where the restroom was empty. The girls' room was empty and the boys' room was packed. And so I invited five women to walk the floor of CES with me. And 24 hours later, 50 women showed up. And it was a pretty remarkable experience for me where two remarkable things happened. One, every single guy's head turned, and I coined the phrase power of the pack. A woman alone has power, collectively we have impact. And the second remarkable thing was I was surrounded by women just like me. And that was just, like, I still have goosebumps thinking about that moment. We talked about work-life balance and imposter syndrome, and we were all doing deals with one another, and that never happened in my entire 40-year career. I'm 61 years old. Like, that was just this wow moment for me, and I loved it. And the next day, 50 women turned to 100, and 100 women turned to 300. And that was when the girls' lounge was born. The opposite of boy was girl. The opposite of club was lounge. If there was a boys' club, now there was a girls' lounge. And today, 10 years later, we have 3 million women supporting other women in every single industry. And the girls' lounge became a safe space for women to support other women and to be ourselves. And once women started supporting women, I evolved Girls' Lounge to a quality lounge, the place for conscious leaders, bringing everyone together to talk about changing the equation and closing the gender gap. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, if you're in a position of power, you know, bring everyone up and let's rewrite the rules of the workplace so that everyone can thrive.
Amazing. And then I know it would be hard to imagine one or two of your favorite moments, but if you could try, I know it's been a very eventful 10 years, and even the past few weeks alone, you're coming off a very
successful South by Southwest. I got to see and participate in the remarkable program that you had at Davos, where you went in depth with issues that were so personal for some women. You brought in some of the top CEOs from across the globe, the Fortune 10. Tell us, what have been one or two of the most rewarding moments for you over the past 10 years?
I think we do pop-ups at the largest conferences around the world, as you mentioned. But when we got invited for the first time, probably 9 years ago, to the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, where world leaders attend, my invitation was, we want you to come, but you might not feel welcome. That was the invitation. And of course, at the World Economic Forum, it's where world leaders come, Fortune 500 CEOs, government officials. And here, the invitation was to the Girls Lounge. And so I thought, my head said, who wants to go to a place I'm not going to be welcome? But my heart, ba-boom, ba-boom, you follow your heart, female intuition. My heart said, I must go. And I remember going to one of our corporate sponsors, and it was a women's piece of the financial institution. And I said, I need $250,000 to go and create the Girls Lounge, because we were getting this hole in the wall, this shack. And they said, well, we'll sponsor you, but you have to change the name, because the Girls Lounge isn't really the right name for the World Economic Forum. And I said, I'm not going to change the name. That's the name. And they said, well, then we can't sponsor you. And so I decided I'm going to spend my own money, because I have to bring the Girls Lounge to the World Economic Forum. And it was scary. It was really scary. And so I called a girlfriend of mine who was the COO of Bloomberg. And I said, Jackie, will you go with me? I don't want to go by myself. And she said, of course. And so it was called the Girls Lounge, the place for the 17%. Because only 17% of white badges, which is what you need for the World Economic Forum,
were women.
And so I hung the shingle, and we showed up, and we had great programming, and so many people popped their head in, like, what the heck is this? It definitely stood out. But we were there. And, you know, 10 years later, we are standing room only, and the who's who, you know, come. And we brought the diversity to the World Economic Forum, and we created an unbadged space so that we invited who we wanted, which is everyone. And it is a pretty remarkable experience that today, Jamie Dimon and the CEO of Cisco and the CEO of Deloitte and the CEO of McKinsey and the CEO of Ernst & Young and the CEO of every single Fortune 500 company and world leaders and all the white badges that are in our space at the Equality Lounge, which was formerly the Girls Lounge, as well as every white badge and women of color and the who's who, are all in the Equality Lounge. So that is a highlight, I have to say. And of course, you know, probably another highlight is, we are not a women's business. We are not a DE&I business. We are in the business of equality. And according to the World Economic Forum, they say it'll take over 131 years to close the gender gap. 131 years. Where will you be? Where will your children be? Where will your grandchildren be? I mean, that is the most ridiculous thing in the universe. Like, who is going to pay attention to gender equality if you can't close it? So we put up a big sign that said, equality is possible if you want it. We created the internet in 25 years, ChatGPT in 2 weeks, a vaccine in 1 year. We sent men to the moon in 10. We can close the gender gap in less than 5 with intentionality, prioritization, and conscious leadership. And that was the challenge to Fortune 500 CEOs. We said, this is the only global goal out of 17 that in the lifetime of your leadership, you can actually achieve if you want it. Take on that challenge. And so we actually have made equality sexy. And we got every CEO to actually be thinking about it with a moonshot mindset. And we've made that a priority. And so we're pretty excited about it. And we are in the business of equality, with a community of over now 4 million women in business that are actively supporting one another to make this a possibility in the lifetime of our leadership.
Wow. Well, those are some highlights. And we mentioned that you're just coming from South by Southwest. Are there a few memorable moments you could share with our listeners?
Every conference is different. South by Southwest is really exciting because it brings this community of entrepreneurial spirit. You know, so many entrepreneurs that are there. And so it's got sizzle. You know, it's just got this vibrancy and this energy that is just electrifying. And so we had so many female entrepreneurs, which is exciting. And then one of the things that we've really identified in bridging the gender gap is procurement. Less than 5% of supply chain goes in Fortune 500 companies and even government contracts go to women-owned businesses. Less than 5%. Not for lack of talent.
Not for lack of availability.
5%, 95%. I mean, that doesn't feel close to equal, in my opinion. 5%, 95%. And it's all legacy. Legacy. So we are doing a really big new push all around supply chain, value chain, procurement to get more business for women-owned businesses. And that's all around certification and most importantly, storytelling. So pretty exciting about that. And then we had a panel on women in sports. So big push on getting more media dollars for women in sports. It comes down to storytelling, visibility, making the invisible visible. So yeah, I know we just had so many great experiences and speakers and lineup. And oftentimes you'll say, oh my God, where are all the women on main stages? And they'll say, well, there's not enough experts. And I'm like, there are plenty. We had 95% of our speakers were badass women. You're just looking for CEO. So don't look for CEO, look for experts. Change your mindset. Actually, we had a big full page ad in the New York Times. It said, equality is a mindset. It's all mindset. Change your mindset. Open your mindset. Maybe that's a better way of phrasing it.
And you've mentioned some issues to which you remain firm. It's your mission. It's your passion. And you've mentioned some new projects that you've taken on as you evolve, as society evolves, as the needs change. And I'm curious, has your vision for the organization changed at all in the past 10 years?
No, it just keeps evolving, you know, and it hasn't changed. It evolves. And it evolves with all of us. You know, 1 + 1 = 11. I mean, look how you've come into our lives and you have inspired us in so many ways. I mean, Equal AI, and we created a phrase 10 years ago called the algorithm for equality. And who knew AI was going to be so present and so prevalent and so relevant and so important in our lives? And with the generative piece of growth and investment with every individual that touches AI, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it becomes more and more important that representation matters. And it doesn't just matter as if you can see her, you can be her, which was an organization, a movement I started with the ANA. It is about using your reflection and your power to create change. And I think that that is the most important piece, to make sure that what you do, what we do, is heard, seen, and that our voices are put in every single aspect of what we do, not just in the designers of AI, but that the representation of all people are reflected in algorithms, because right now they are so imbalanced. And I think that that is so important. And so many people today, with everything that happened in Gemini, are saying, oh, get rid of DE&I. Well, that is not a reflection of DE&I. That might have been a diversity imbalance, but that isn't a representation reflection. We need to have representation in all aspects to ensure that equality is at play, or we will have problems. But that doesn't mean we need to get rid of DE&I. We need to make sure that people are listening to hear, and that is reflected in everything that we do, and that process is maintained and ascertained with truth at every level, and that the principles of equality and equity are assessed and respected and reflected on a global basis, and that the principles are maintained, and that we don't make mistakes along the way, or we will have the imbalance and the bias that we have been experiencing.
No question. And I'd love to talk a little bit more about your work in AI. I actually got to meet you about 5 years ago at South by Southwest when I came into the FQ Lounge looking for a fun place to be and some great programming. And you recruited me onto the stage for the next talk, which happened to be on AI and bias. And it was so much fun. It was such a great conversation. And so I know firsthand of your depth of knowledge on AI, your commitment to ensuring that it is not harmful, that it can be the innovative force that we all hope and have seen it to be. But we know that this transformative technology can scale harms. You talk about the discrimination that can come from AI. And the hard part is when we're talking about with technology, the end user may not even know that they're perpetuating these harms. So would love to learn more about how and when you turned your focus to artificial intelligence and what inspired your Algorithm for Equality manifesto.
You know, it's so funny because I'm a data geek. I've been a data geek for 40 years. I've been in the data business forever. And I've always designed research for the lowest common denominator. Because if you design for the lowest common denominator, you design for everyone. And it has to be inclusively designed so that everyone can participate. And so when I wrote the Algorithm for Equality on a napkin, when I was thinking about the female quotient, quotient is an algorithm, I didn't really understand why I wrote that, truthfully, but I knew that quotient was an algorithm, and I knew that I was going to be in the business of equality, and so I wrote the Algorithm for Equality. I didn't know what the algorithm was, though, and so I knew one day I was going to have to develop an algorithm and an equation. And then when I created the movement, See Her, and I wrote the phrase, if you could see her, you could be her, I knew reflection mattered. I knew representation mattered because that was part of the equation. But then I started realizing that representation isn't just about reflection. And if I were rewriting that all over again, if you could see her, you could be her, I would say I was wrong. Because just because I see you doesn't mean that's good enough. Because you now have to use your power to create change. So I would add that piece. So then when I started seeing AI and the biases in AI and started hearing about all these issues and starting to use it when I was using the generative AI tools or ChatGPT, I realized that my voice wasn't heard because it would use masculine language and play back he or things like that. And so I would sit at night 6 months ago and try to teach it my voice. And I kept correcting it over and over. And 3 hours a night, I would put in my language and say, can you play it back? And I would see it would make a difference. And it would play back my words. And so I knew that somehow the algorithm was off. Or when I would put in search, if you go Google search, like you already know in Google search, it would pull up, if you put CEO, it would pull up white men. And so algorithms aren't working. You know, what goes in comes out. So who's programming is very clear, is the voice that's coming back, which made a lot of sense to me. And so I knew there was bias, obviously, what goes in. And then we started profiling women. And I started writing profiles and populating profiles in search and putting them in. And we congratulate women, congratulate women, congratulate women, congratulate women. And we would see searches would change. The more you put in, data in, data out, junk in, junk out, good stuff in, good stuff out.
And that's how algorithms work.
So you know there's bias. And you also know that you need more diversity across the board. So that's when I realized we have to start getting involved in that. And then we started bringing all of our women. And the New York Times article came out where all it talked about was men in AI. And I'm like, gosh, I know amazing women in AI. And so we brought this community together and we drafted the manifesto. And then I see yours and then I see some others. And I'm like, oh my God, we need to universalize this and start putting some principles in place and some checks and balances. Because if not, we're going to have some real default mechanisms that are not going to be equality defaults. And so we started creating a writing room and collectively drafting. And then someone on the team wrote something so good, which was, a manifesto by us, BYUS, without bias, BIAS. I thought, oh, genius. And if representation is at the table, it will reflect all of us without bias. And so that's what we did. Long story, sorry. That was sort of the logic around it. And I thought that's kind of genius. And so, you know, we have women in 100 countries by race, by religion, by age, by intersectionality, with accessibility, blah, 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 which is kind of pretty good. And when you think about all these inventions that were designed by men on men, there are flaws. I mean, look at the seatbelt. I mean, they are not anatomically comfortable, or the airbag. I mean, the number one fatality is women, designed by men on male bones. You know, I mean, I can go off on a million inventions. We know the problem. It's the same thing, inherent bias. How much time do we got?
Well, you're sharing so many great experiences, these inspirations that have led to these programs and these terms that inspire us. But in addition to coming up with these great terms, you are a woman of action. And your manifesto includes a roadmap for how to start engaging with AI. So can you please clarify for us, what are a few things you recommend everyone do today?
Well, I mean, number one, you should have key principles that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 that are checks to ensure that your teams are following certain protocols. An algorithm is a process. So have process to have checks and balances so that you are following the process. And I think that that's incredibly important. So that is what we want to send to different companies. But then I had another idea this weekend that we're going to talk about, because I kind of think that lived experience, that's my new word for qualitative, that if we have a representative focus group, which is the new lived experience, I'm going to call that lived experience, where companies can send us, and I think we talked about this the other day, but I have a new iteration for us. If we can have like this random sampling of a representative population to test it in real time, followed a process, and have the checks and balance to ensure that it meets the criteria, then we can have like a little quick qual and say, oh, looks good, and send it back. So it's like a little qual lab. Ooh, no, you know what it's going to be called?
What?
An equal lab.
Mm-hmm. A nonstop inspiration and action. And addition to the algorithm for equality that we should talk about all day, there are so many different facets. You also talk about, and you've already mentioned, your focus on championing women in the AI field and clarifying that it's not just about fairness, but it's a strategic imperative. So can you tell us a little bit more about if, or when, I should say, your vision for women and others who are so important to ensure we have equality, when this vision is materialized, what would this look like? What would it look like when we live in Shelley's vision of our better world?
Just, you know, it's an open world for all, you know? I think it's just, open is a really important world. And not just as designers and coders, but in the business of AI. It's not just the technical side of AI, but I think it's all aspects as well. And I think so many people think that AI is going to replace women because most of those positions are entry level. I think it's going to open up so many more opportunities for all of us, and we should embrace it and be positive and see only the opportunities that are in front of us and not be afraid of it, but embrace it with open arms. And I've never been more optimistic and excited, because it'll be higher paid job opportunities for all of us. And the entry level, routinized, mechanical things will go away. It'll give us more efficiency. And then the higher paid upskilling will be available. And we shall be learning now, early, often. Get in, don't be afraid, embrace, get your hands dirty, call you for learning and demos and all the kind of amazing stuff that you do. And let's go. I mean, it's exciting.
Let's go. Well, and to just pull that thread a little further, I think it's really important because so many people, when they're talking about women or minorities in AI, we focus on the harms, and you really are also underscoring the opportunities and possibilities. And you've also talked about how AI can help even reduce bias and close the gender gap. You mentioned a little bit about that there, but can you tell us more about how AI can be an essential tool in creating this equality, in fulfilling your dream of closing the gender gap, and in reducing bias and harm?
Yeah, I think it democratizes education, it democratizes skill, it democratizes equal opportunity, and I think it opens the door for everyone. I think free AI, doors closed, this opens new windows.
Fantastic. Well, I hate for this conversation to end because it is always such a charge to hear your thoughts and to talk with you, but I know we have to let you get back to all these exciting programs and inventions and innovations underway. So I'll ask you the final question we ask all of our guests, and that is, what is the AI innovation you are most excited to see come to fruition?
Oh gosh, I think AI for health and AI for education, but I think what it will do for healthcare is going to be remarkable. I wish it was there for my dad 6 years ago, but it's going to help so many people in the future.
Cheers to that. Well, Shelley, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today and for all that you're doing to help ensure we have a more equal AI empowered world.
God bless. And here's to everything that you are doing.
Subscribe to or download our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. We always welcome your feedback. And if you like the podcast, please rate us or give us a review. To learn more or get involved, visit us at www.equalai.org and www.weforum.org.
And a special thanks to NP Agency, without whom this podcast would not be possible.